Your journey to self is like peeling layers of an onion. With every layer you shed, you come closer to your core. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I'm a total and complete shit show. I'm the captain of this hot mess of a ship. And if you're wondering what the hell an adult child is, an adult child is somebody who grew up in a dysfunctional family whose unresolved childhood pain is surfacing and playing out in adulthood. And not in a good way, folks. And not in a good way. What does this look like? People-pleasing, approval-seeking, an inability to say no, an overdeveloped sense of responsibility, a fear of people and authority figures, low self-esteem, extremely judgmental of oneself and others, a deep fear of abandonment, a tendency to be attracted to those with substance abuse issues or other compulsive behaviors, an addiction to excitement. And so I realized that I was an adult child at 9 years sober. You know, I had always known that my childhood was less than ideal, but I sure as hell did not realize that what I had endured qualified as complex trauma. And there are so many people out there who also don't realize this, people that cannot figure out what the hell's wrong with them, who are trying to work through certain issues and haven't been able to work through them, not realizing that what they deemed as a quote-unquote not so bad childhood was actually traumatic. And the truth of the matter is experiencing repetitive, recurring little t trauma like emotional neglect can wreak so much havoc on one's sense of self. Experiencing multiple little t traumas during childhood can be so much more detrimental compared to just experiencing one big T trauma. So if you're new here, go listen to my very first episode, Adult Child and While I'll Never Date Another Guy Named Brian. It's required listening around here. We curse here, you've been warned. I'm an acquired taste, you've been warned. So glad you finally made it. So today we are diving deep with returning guest, Bethany Webster, our resident expert on healing the mother wound, the author of Discovering the Inner Mother, A Guide to Healing the Mother Wound. If you haven't listened to her first appearance, I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes. One of the many things we're diving into today, which I didn't know that we were going to be diving into today, is the most recent layer of the onion that she's had to peel well into her healing journey. And I just think it's so important for y'all to hear these experiences from these subject matter experts, practitioners, healers, therapists, you name it. I think it's so important that you hear that they still struggle. You hear that even after, you know, years and years and years of this healing work, there's always still more shit to work through, because I think so many of us struggle with, I should be so much further along, or I should have worked through this stuff by now. And the fact of the matter is, this just takes such a long time to work through. This is a never-ending journey of peeling the onion. That doesn't mean that we're going to be in this like perpetual, habitual, you know, state of emotional pain and grief forever and ever and ever. It's not what I'm saying. We are going to experience a lot of joy and happiness, but there's always more layers of growth. And for me, I think that that's the beauty of what we're doing here is the opportunities that we have here for growth. Another thing that I wasn't expecting, didn't see coming, didn't know about Bethany is we're talking about how she just wrapped up 4 years of couples counseling with her ex. Yes, her and her ex, they broke up 4 years ago, and they've spent the last 4 years in couples counseling, not working on the relationship, but working on themselves, working through their unresolved childhood shit and triggers that shows up in the relationship. And as we always say, this is relational trauma, and this shit shows up in relationships. So really fascinating, in my opinion, really fascinating to hear this. So let's just get on with the damn thing. But first, a few things. The first of which being, I'm excited to announce a workshop that I am hosting with Boundaries coach and queen herself, Barb Nangle, called Stop Overgiving. Repair your life from the inside out. So if you are somebody who constantly finds yourself giving, giving, and then giving some more to the point where you're completely burnt out and over that shit, or if you are somebody who is sick of constantly saying yes when you really want to say no, or if you are somebody who really looks like you have your shit together on the outside, but actually in the inside, you're falling apart, this one's for you, okay? This one's for you. It is happening on Wednesday, November 13th at 7 p.m. Eastern, where you will learn how to set clear, authentic boundaries without feeling like an asshole. Barb is going to be giving you actionable tips, scripts, and real tools that you can start using right away to help you start breaking through those people-pleasing patterns. This workshop is available to everyone and anyone. It's free for Super Shit Show members. It's at a discounted price for you regular old Shit Show members. And I also announced in this past Shit Show Saturdays episode, in case you didn't hear it, I'm offering a special for you non-Shit Show members. So anybody who joins the community between now and the end of October, you will get access to this workshop for free. Okay, for free. So head to the show notes, get your spot in the workshop, or damn the Join Shit Show. On that note, let's talk about why you should damn the Join Shit Show, my online support community, where I host 4 weekly Zoom support groups. All I want to say here right now, the only thing I'm going to add here is, you guys, the holidays are approaching. The holidays are approaching, which means you need a support community more than ever. Am I right? Am I right? So, hey, you, yes, you, the person that's been wanting to join for forever, how about you actually do that today? And you'll also get this damn workshop for free. See the link in the show notes. Next, give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, at Adult Child Pod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, please, please give me a 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. Thank you. Love you all. Okay, Shit Show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow Shit Show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas, man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger Shit Show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ADULTCHILD at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ADULTCHILD for 15% off today.
Do you Shit Shows ever feel like you're just too damn busy to eat healthy? So I used to feel this way. Every day I would wake up with the intention of eating clean, and before you know it, it's 10:30 p.m., I'm in my bed, and I'm eating smart food popcorn. That is, until I found the perfect solution. Meal kits from Sunbasket. No matter what your lifestyle is, Sunbasket caters to your kind of healthy. Every single recipe is Shit Show proof, so pre-measured, pre-proportioned, easy to prepare. I most recently made the seared Alaskan halibut with mashed potatoes and herb brown butter parmesan sauce, and it was damn good. And for you Shit Shows out there who only know how to work a microwave, Sunbasket also has pre-made meals that are ready to eat in less than 5 minutes. No prep, no mess. So go to sunbasket.com/adultchild today to save $120 off your first 4 deliveries. That is sunbasket.com/adultchild to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your very first order. You say I can put your loving name out, baby.
Well, she's back. What do people call you? The mother wound mama? Like, what, a Ms. Mother Wound? Do you get like the title of the mother wound queen?
I don't know.
No,
I don't
Bethany
know.
Webster. What do you want to be called? You're like, I'm done with
I think
mother
there was
wound.
A time I wanted to be the leading expert on the mother wound because a lot of people were taking my work and like stealing it. And that felt like a real pain point for me. Now I don't really care. I'm just like, I'm
take
this
it,
is what
share
I do.
It, do whatever.
I don't care about being the number one. I don't, you know, I think like I had some ego death along the way. I'm just like, I'm happy people are talking about it. I don't like it when people steal other people's work, but I'm just staying in my lane and doing my work and pumping out, you know, the content from my own journey. And if it helps people, awesome. And if people, and I also think that people have a limit. Like, I really respect that some people follow me for a while and then they don't follow me for a while because this is intense work. And it's kind of like, you need to titrate sometimes because I really have learned to appreciate over the years that I'm constantly putting something painful in front of people saying, you have to look at this, you have to work on this. And people are like, damn, you're right. But they're also like, crap, I don't think I can at this moment. So I really respect people's like relationship with the work. And I appreciate that I have a really strong tolerance and capacity to hold it, you know? And I just kind of say, people will find me when they're ready, you know, like go do the other things, figure it out. And then whenever you're ready, the work that I offer will be here because it is long-term, in-depth, challenging, very difficult. So I try to give people like nuggets that they can take in little bite-sized pieces until they're ready to like come and do the full course.
Yeah, I guess that probably helps like with me adding humor into the podcast, that it's not just like total intense, like doom and gloom and shit all the time. Okay, so I'm going to include your first episode in the show notes, but let's just give a recap of you coming to terms with the impact of your childhood and in particular, your mother wound.
Okay. So you want to hear my story?
No, you don't think of the whole thing, but like, if you just want to talk about the moment, like when you realized your mother wound, that part of the story.
Yeah, sure.
Coming to terms with that, just for a little recap.
Yeah. Quick summary. I knew when I was a kid that there was something wrong, but the general narrative was I had a great family. My mom was my best friend. You know, we were close. And then when I went to college, I just started having, when I got distance from the family, that's when all my symptoms started. And I started to realize that I had a lot of problems with self-worth, self-esteem, and boundaries, people pleasing, conflict avoidance, all this stuff. And I realized it actually came from my mother, the things that I learned from her. You know, don't rock the boat. Don't think you're too good. Don't talk too much. Don't tell people what you need. People don't really want, you know, put yourself last. That's how people like you. You know, all these kind of messages. I was totally practicing them. I was, you know, don't expect too much from people. Don't expect too much from yourself. And, you know, getting people to like you is the number one thing. And I just started to see, holy crap, this is all across my life in all these different areas, romantic relationships, relationship with career. It was all kind of these messages. And it wasn't just from my mother. It was also from the culture. Mm-hmm. And so I also realized, especially when I came out of a particular relationship, that I was totally screwing myself because I was involved in these kind of fantasies, like projecting onto people things that they weren't and wanting them to be different, but staying and putting up with stuff. And I realized, you know, I have to do something about this because if I don't, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Like I just had this clear sense that this is what all the women in my family have done is just kind of endure, put up with stuff, you know, feel shitty and not expect too much from themselves or from life, not like do anything about it, like not commit. So I made a real commitment to my healing. And I knew at the same time, there was so much dread because I'm like, this means I have to confront my mother on some level. I need to like shift this dynamic because I was very codependent with her and kind of, she expected me to always be somewhat subservient to her. Like don't, she was a jealous woman, never would admit that, but jealous, small-minded, and really kind of threatened by me. And so when I, as I was growing and healing and becoming more empowering, she became much more distant. And I was like, I want to change this dynamic with her. And so I did talk to her about it. And when I talked to her about it, I knew it was going to go badly. And it did. It went worse than I could have imagined. So she basically, unfortunately, and this is not true for everybody, this is just my situation, but she took my desire to grow as an attack on her and her power. So she quickly said to me, "Goodbye, Bethany. You're not my daughter. I've had a stranger in my midst. You've been a stranger all these years. Basically, you've been so good and compliant. And now what's wrong with you? You're so
You're a demon
difficult."
baby. Yes.
So that's when I realized, holy moly, this is worse than I thought. It kind of peeled off the lid of everything I intuited. In some ways, it was really validating because it was like, I knew that there were really toxic, dysfunctional things going on in my family. And when it all came up to the surface through me setting new boundaries, it all came out. And it was like, I could feel my mother saying to me, "How dare you? How dare you believe? How dare you have the audacity to speak to me like with self-respect, you know, like without seeing me as more or better or overpowering you?" Like, she really took my self-esteem that was so hard won painstakingly in therapy for so many years because she never got the chance. And I mean, part of me completely understands that. Like, she suppressed and tolerated and endured because she didn't feel like she could have a voice or that she could have boundaries or that she could talk back and actually advocate for herself and with her own mother. So it was so triggering when I did that. And I said, "Actually, no, I can't tolerate that. Let's change the dynamic. I want to be close to you, but I don't want to have this like codependency." And she couldn't handle that kind of liminal space in the relationship. It was just like, "Well, you shouldn't come here anymore when you come to town." And it was really like so
This
breathtakingly.
was on one conversation.
This was a series of conversations in quick succession over email and phone to the point where it got so bad where I was like, "I need distance. Like, let's just pause. Like, I just need space. This is too much." And she said, "Well, if you don't talk to me, I'm going to show up at your job. I'm going to show up at your house. I'm going to do this or that." I mean, it was really unhinged to the point where I felt like I needed to get a restraining order against her because it was so scary. It became so scary. And I understand why people don't want to do the mother wound work because sometimes you can really, it takes a lot of courage because some of the things we're facing in our dysfunctional families have incredible momentum of generations and generations behind them. So it did feel like I was in some kind of Harry Potter movie or something where I'm like, I have to hold my ground. Like, I can't. It was like a battle. And it was like, I have to. The thing that kept me strong through all of it was my integrity, you know, like this sense like, I have to do what I feel is right for me. I'm not going to succumb to this riptide of, you are less than me, and I'm your mother, and therefore I decide what's right and what's wrong, which is very patriarchal, you know, and has, I mean, there's so much to it. But that's when I knew, you know, it was a scary cascade of events that made clear that my family could no longer accommodate me in a more healed, healthy state, and I needed to exit the family. And not many people fought for me. I don't have any contact with anybody in the family. It was pretty bad with my brother and my father, but a lot of the extended family just kind of
It's not
nothing.
worth it to them, probably.
It's not worth it because their mother was the personality disordered female who everybody organized around because they were terrified of her. They're all blended with their inner children, right? Everything's fine. There's a big mythology about the family that it was, you know, upstanding and loving, and there was loving moments, and that was all there too, but there was this undercurrent of shadow that no one wanted to talk about, which was my mother's upbringing in the family, which had alcoholism, abuse, neglect, severe levels. And I didn't even know about any of it until later, around the time that all this came to light.
And how did you learn all about how did you learn about it?
I learned about it through kind of whispers in the family, and it was like whispers through my cousins, and it started to all kind of make sense that, oh shit, there's so much more to this, and it was so much bigger than me, and I just happened to be one person who wanted to heal in the family, and I had the one that had did the most therapy, so it was I became the threat, you know.
Had you ever seen that level of like aggression and just callousness from your mother when she like with the, I'm going to show up at your work, I'm going to show up at your home. Like, had you ever seen that side of her before? Did you know that she had that in her?
I did not know that she had that level of primitive rage. No, I did not know that. I did hear that she had tried to attack my father on multiple occasions, and that she had threatened suicide on multiple occasions. And
Like this is prior to that experience.
yeah, way prior, I heard. And I think honestly, I blocked it out. It was only till then that I had really thought, holy moly, this is because, you know, when you grow up in a dysfunctional family, it's part of it is ignoring red flags, right? You kind of have to ignore them because you have to survive in the family. So it kind of becomes normal to almost like numb out or dissociate when you hear disturbing information. So only when I had done enough therapy and had a more distance did it start to, everything started to click. Like things I had heard, things I had seen were actually really disturbing and I didn't even know it. And then I started to, you know, when you kind of pierce the veil of denial, all kind, you know, your subconscious will release information. It's like, oh my gosh, started having emotional flashbacks, started, I mean, I discovered a whole set of abuse I didn't even know about when I first, so it
That
was
you
just
had
like
endured?
that I had endured personally.
So repressed memories.
I had repressed memories come
And
up.
how are they coming? This has been a big theme lately. So how were they coming up for you? Was it visual, a felt sense? Was it all at once? Was it in bits and pieces?
It was in bits and pieces, and it started with nightmares. And then I had trouble sleeping at night. I would have terrible nightmares and like, almost like nightmares that I was awake. Like I would have smells and sounds. It was like my brain started to unlock sensory data that I had picked up during the abuse. And then it culminated. I remember it was a weekend where it all came up and I had no real pictures. I didn't have pictures, but I had this feeling like I was sitting in like a sewer. And it was so bad. It was like I just had to let myself cry for about 2 days and sit in a ball in my jammies in my bed and just cry for a week, a weekend. It was only a couple of days, but it was horrible. It was just like, oh my God, this is how bad it was. This is how bad it was. And that stuff was really about my dad. The person I thought he was actually a predator. So it was like, oh, sh you know, it was just like my brain was going, whoa. Like I had this surface understanding of who he was in my mind because I needed to, because my things with my mother were so painful that I almost needed this cover image of him that wasn't true. And so as I healed so much of my mother wound, it was like suddenly my father, the truth about him started to come into ox to the surface and get oxygen. And I started to realize, oh my God, that's who he was and that's what he did. And it was just like this whole other thing. So trigger warning. I should have probably said a trigger
The
warning.
one two, it was the 1-2 punch. So
Yeah. It was
how long after that conversation with your mom did that happen?
me do some math. The conversation with her started in 2008, and then the stuff with my dad happened 2 years ago. So a long time
Okay.
between.
And were you surprised that, or did you expect your dad to also cut communication with you? Like when your mom, like, did you go into that experience thinking that he was going to fight for you a little bit more? Because he didn't really try at all, right? He just kind of just like kicked you to the wayside right away, too, right? There was like real no effort.
There was really no effort. I prayed he would. There was this situation where I didn't hear from him when it was really bad with my mom, like in the 2007. I was having that whole, like the bomb went off and it was bad. And I hadn't heard from him. And I remember I called, I was walking down the street in New York City. It was raining after work. And I called my grandmother's house, his mother, and he was there. And I was like, Dad, I haven't talked to you in weeks. And I remember I went into this cafe because I needed to get out of the rain and talk to him. And there were people sitting at the cafe just minding their own business. And I was just weeping in front of them, like, Dad, I miss you and I need to talk to you. And this thing is happening with mom. And he was such a coward that he only talked to me when he went to his mother's house. And he didn't fight for me. He was really dominated by her, and I think he had this belief that I'm the good guy, so I'm gonna like stay around and put up with this, like kind of a masochistic energy of like my first duty is to her. Like they kind of had this codependent, like karmic sick relationship of like,
Clearly.
you know, they got together when they were 15 years old. They both came from really tough families. And they just battled with each other, but they could never leave each other, you know?
It
I don't
this
know.
This seems to be really fucking common
Really?
of dads that are abusive, and then these really nasty narcissistic mothers. But then in the marriage dynamic, it's like the woman wears the pants in a way. And then the guy's like the dad in adulthood is almost comes across as like the safer parent
Right.
because you have such a tough relationship with your mom. But then you realize that, then you realize all the shit that happened like with your dad when you were a kid. Like I keep hearing this over and over and over and over again. It's
Yeah,
really
it's a pattern.
interesting. I guess it takes that kind of a personality type to be married to a man who would do that to their kids. Like, I don't. And then it's like her anger at you. It's like, how much did that change how you felt about her? Because so much of that rage and anger towards you is the fucking rage and anger that she has at herself for not protecting you.
You know, I didn't even put that together at the time. I just thought, this is the rage of my mother. This is my mother's rage at her own mother. You know, like I became the nasty mother to her, the punisher. You know, I was the betrayer because she had done everything right. So I became this mother. That's how I saw it was, you know, she was so enraged at her own mother that she could never actually access it, put it towards its true target. So I became the stand-in for that. But now looking back, I see what you're saying. I have no idea why. I think she would be totally in denial that it ever happened with him, but I have no idea. Like I had all the signs. Like it was a big thing for me to like go online and see what are the signs of sexual abuse.
She knew,
I had every single one.
and she was pissed at her mom because it probably happened to her.
Yeah, probably did. Oh my God, right? This is so sad. This is so, it's so sad and tragic.
It is.
Because the more years you come out from healing, the more you can see. It's almost like widening rings of awareness where it's just, it becomes more sad. And for me, I do feel like I don't hold, you know, it's been a big thing for me to feel compassion for my mother and my father. Like they literally could not be different. That's where I'm at now. It's like
And
I
you'll
they
vacillate, you
yeah
know.
yeah
But I think that, and I think most people get there, but I do think it is so. I was talking about this recently with another guest. I think it's so important because when we don't realize that, I think it makes it more about us in a way. Like she's treating me this way, or she doesn't love me as much because there's something wrong with me. When it's almost like it's a choice and it's really not.
It's really not a choice.
It's like I can't even grapple with what that must be like. There's definitely what she knows or doesn't know. There's definitely denial, and it's definitely very sophisticatedly constructed, you
For
know, that she
sure, for
can't
sure.
even go there, but it's way too fucking scary, right?
Yeah, it must
And then
feel
of course
shattering.
he can't side with you because she's siding with him by
Yeah,
keeping
it's like a
quiet.
terrible triangle. It's a terrible
It is.
triangle. And as a child, there's no way you can win. It's an impossible situation. Like the only way I could have ever had my parents' love, according to their standards, was to just have a small, sad life like theirs, you know, where it's just like you drink a lot to cope, you have crappy friends, work your ass off and you feel, bullied by life. It's really, it's a hard way to live because there's so much in your subconscious that you're playing out that you're not dealing with. And it's kind of like choose your hard. I chose the hard of I'm going to go to therapy and pull all this shit up and deal with it rather than the hard of let me just put it all in the basement. And let my life have a chaos to it. You know, it's just.
Yeah, there's pros and cons. Sometimes, like when this shit gets really hard, it's like kind of feels like it'd be a little bit easier. Just like remain in the denial. And then, every once in a while, I think that with my parents sometimes, because they're both like active alcoholics. I'm like, yeah, what kind of would be the softer, easier way sometimes just be fucked up all the time, but it's not. But yeah, it's so tragic, and it's just so interesting how some people wake up and some people don't. And it's like, I don't know what the rhyme and reason is, behind that. Because I think that we're all just as worthy,
We are. We really are. And I feel like they're all good people, at the core.
Yeah,
Like
me too.
they don't want to hurt themselves or other people, but they don't know how not to. And that's all I can do is what I've been doing for so many years is just grieve that. And as the distance of time happens, I can feel the validity in their choice. It's like, well, it's their life. They get to choose it. They get to live how they want to live. They get to believe what they want to believe. And I think I found the most freedom in like letting them have the freedom to hate me, letting them have the freedom to see me as the terrible daughter that turned on them, and like let them have that because it doesn't actually hurt me,
No, and there is a part of them that knows that that's not the case too. There is a part of them. So this is really interesting. So that happened 2 years ago, and you started doing this mother wound work 10 years ago is when you confronted your, when did you really start hitting this hard?
I was in therapy since I was 19 years old, so that was in
But when did you start really focusing on healing your mother wound?
2005-ish.
Okay. So here you are, Miss Mother Wound. And then 2 years ago, you realize that you have a pretty significant father wound.
Yep.
And where was that showing up in your life? Let's dive into this.
Yeah, it really surprised me, to be honest with you. I think I was resistant to looking at it because I was like, I need one. I think subconsciously I was like, I need one parent to
Can't
not
both
be
be
a
horrible.
monster.
Because God, I need a little bit of good in my genetics. Come on now. Give me a break.
Yeah, and I started to, it was a real cognitive dissonance because I was having the nightmares, I was having the flashbacks.
Do you think that something triggered those, or do you think that you just, as we talked about before, as you gain more resilience and capacity to heal, that shit just comes up? Or do you think that there was something in particular that was helping
Oh, it was
push it
helping.
up?
Yeah, there were things helping. I think it was in my relationship at the time. My partner was just like, you totally numb out sometimes. Do you realize that? I'm like, no. He's like, you're numbing out. Like, even just when we're hanging out or when we were, talking or doing stuff together, she's like, you're not here. And I was like, oh, interesting. I wonder what that's about. And then I started just being curious about it and seeing like what it why am I don't ever think of myself that way. I think of myself as so present, and so
Just
aware.
kind of dissociating,
Yeah, just dissociating,
zoning out.
zoning out. And yeah, totally like leaving my body. Like she's not here. And that is around the same time that I started having the nightmares, the flashbacks. Like for example, I would have these nightmares where oh, I don't know. I'm in bed and I'm frozen. I'm a child, frozen in my bed. I can't move. There's someone next to my bed and it was like a man's neck. So I would have these dreams where I would just be frozen. I could not move and it was terrifying. And then the dreams would evolve and it would be, I would be able with all of my might, with my little hand, oh, grab his neck and squeeze it to get him to stop. So that was a big win. It was like, okay, I'm moving out of frozen, right? And then there was a dream. This is just fast forward. Then I had a dream where my actual father was over me ominously as a child. And again, that's the recurring dream that would always happen. And then I got up as my adult self and I don't know what I did. I said something, but he ran away like an animal on all fours. So I was able to vanquish him. And then that's when I started to feel like I had crossed over into more of adult. My inner child trusted me. I got to have my psyche where the adult part of me was protecting the child from my dad. So that was like a healing, momentous moment for me with that. And I think I stopped having symptoms after that.
Wow.
So does that make sense? It was like my, it was all coming from, and I think I was really little, you know, I might have been between ages of 5 and 10.
I was going to ask you, are you somebody that like didn't have many memories at all from those ages, or you just didn't like, are you somebody that just like, because a lot of people just don't have that many memories from younger childhood. Did you, or not really?
I did. I
Just
had a lot
about
of
that stuff.
memories. And so, but I had always rationalized the memories as something else. You know, just like other shit that just didn't make sense. Like I didn't really think too much about it. And then I thought, I have really strong memories of childhood. Like I remember a crazy amount of stuff. So I think I was really aware and alert. But these particular experiences were totally blocked. I remember some weird things. Like I remember telling my mother, like, something's wrong. I have these feelings in the nighttime. I feel like something is hurting me or getting me. And, you know, and then I had this time where I thought someone molested me who was a babysitter. I think I had all, as a child, I was trying to come up with, and there was weird shit that happened there, but I think it was all cover for what was going on. And it was too painful, too scary as a child to process that the person who's hurting you and targeting you is a predator you live with. So you've got to make it about something else. Bad dreams, you know, not feeling comfortable with someone else when it's really not that person.
Now, was there any, what did you have to deal with any shame when that stuff came up? Like, was there shame there or any unexpected emotions or maybe beliefs that you held about yourself that kind of revealed itself there with the dad
No, I
stuff?
think I just felt really so much compassion for my child, the child I was. Like, there was this one day where I had a strong flashback where I was just like, I can't get away from my body. My body feels bad. My body feels scary. And that's how a child makes sense of being harmed, you know, like when the body is the focus, the body's the scary part, not the parent. So the child has to protect themselves. So I just got a real appreciation for the mental gymnastics that my, as a little child, so dependent and vulnerable, had to do to survive that and then to push it into subconscious, you know. So I didn't, in my life, I had a lot of spaciousness and solitude during that time. So it was really just, I felt a lot of safety. You know, I didn't have a lot of people in my life. It was, I live in this kind of monad, I live a bit monastically. So it was like that whole invasion fear got to calm way, way, way down. And I got to really feel into the safety of the present moment, that those fears have a place in time that already passed, you know, that it's not now. So I think the kind of minimalism of my life helped me to not have to go through a lot of sticky other things, like if I had a partner or if I was, you know, distracted by like a lot of busyness or a lot of people or obligations. So the monastic format of my life helped me to just
Be able
really
to deal with it.
deal with it like full on. Like there's so many times in life, right, where like if you have a lot of things in your life that you're dealing with, it's almost like the trauma has to filter through. So you're always kind of dealing with secondary problems on top of the actual trauma. Like I spent so many years dealing with like the surface level tendrils of trauma rather than the actual like hard concrete level stuff, which is, it makes it really hard in a way. So I kind of, I'm a fan of, you know, taking time in your life if you can. I know not everybody can do this, but to minimalize your life when you're going through trauma healing, because then you can work with it directly and there's not a lot of like secondary problems like interpersonal conflicts or
Stuff, yeah, exactly.
burnout from work or, you know,
Yeah.
just a lot of other things that make it even more complex.
You know, it's like, where does this all start? You know, because it's like past from like generation. It's like, who the fuck did it start and what the fuck was going on with them? You know, that's what I want to know. It's like, right? Like, what, who the hell started all this shit and what the hell happened to them?
I know, Matt, like all of us are a product of so many people through so many generations. It's like kind of mind-boggling to think about, how each of us has so many people's influence, both genetically and environmentally. It's like, wow, it's hard to pinpoint it.
It's so complicated. It's
It's so
so
complicated. And I
complicated.
have so much like respect for people that are moms and dads and have like, I really, as the years go on, I feel more and more blessed that I have had the space and the time to heal my trauma so deeply, and that I don't have like kids or a heavy, intense job or, because it makes, we're only here for so many years, and we only have so
Well,
many hours.
I hope that there isn't any more. I don't know what else you could find in there. I think you're good.
Yeah, I know. I know, right?
Has
Well,
there
you know
been
what's.
any, has it, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, has there been anything else? Like, that's obviously like a big deal, but like, has there been anything else this year that you feel like you've been trying to work
Yes.
with?
Yeah, I want to talk about something that's been really, what I'm finding is I feel like the stuff with my dad was the most recent big chunk. And now what I'm working on is, and I said, as I said, I'm living more monastically now, but I'm kind of feel like I'm getting ready to connect with more people
You're the
again.
mother wound monk.
Yeah, right. But like, what I'm passionate about right now is the fact that as I've been healing so much, this intermediary layer between me and life, like life itself, the present moment, the layer of likes and dislikes and conditioning and patterning gets more transparent. And it's like, how can I? And I feel that connection with life itself is different now. It's like life feels less scary. Life feels less ominous. It feels more benevolent. And so it becomes more like, how can I be true to the truth that I have seen spiritually? Like, show up. How can I love people without any residues of trauma? How can I be a safe space for people without any power dynamics? I get excited about how to, it's almost like living inside new skin and seeing life and feeling life in a different way. So it's almost like the spiritual truths I've read about for many, many years are starting to become more and more direct reality, and I find that so fascinating. Like things like I'm a big fan of like non-duality work where it's like,
What is that?
Our, it's it, what it's really about is that there's not really a duality of life of like good or bad or right or wrong. It's more like our true happiness is inside ourselves, like just in the I, like the I am. Like we have all this conditioning and all these roles in the world, but that's really not innate to us. It's something that we wear temporarily. Like there's only one thing going on in the universe right now. It's just one being manifesting itself in innumerable beings, which is really mind-blowing when you think about it. It's just like, what the hell is that? So you start to see more about reality that we couldn't see before. Before it's just like, get me through this day or get me through this moment or how can I fulfill this role? Like you asked me at the beginning of the hour, were you the mother wound expert? And it's like, yeah, that was important to me for a while to be like, write a book was a goal. But then I realized no amount of success, achievement will ever give me what I really want, which is to be who I really am and to not need anything, to not want anything, but to just feel the contentment of just simply being, just being yourself in this present moment, that there's a kind of nourishment and benevolence and just and trust. So I think it's about trusting life, Learning how to trust life and not have to, the whole fatigue of like desires and aversions and negotiating with life all the time to get what we want. It's like we're just using people and things to feel good about ourselves when it's like that's such a crazy demand to put on anything and anyone, So how can I be happy and fulfilled now with whatever is happening and not put my happiness dependent or contingent on other people being a certain way or on life showing up a different way. So, yeah, it's like deepening that innate contentment that is possible. And
Yeah,
it feels
it's all
more.
about your relationship with yourself, right? It's just
Yes, exactly.
cultivating that relationship. What is your journey or your history with spirituality throughout your life? Were you raised going to church? Did you believe in a higher power? What does that look like for you?
I was raised going to church, but I think it, nobody was, but I went all in as a child. I was like full on. I made like my room a little chapel, like a little,
Really?
I was obsessed with the Virgin Mary. I prayed the rosary every day. I think it freaked out people in my family.
That's so funny.
I told them, I'm like, I'm going to be a nun, just FYI. And they're like, what? Of course, my mother was like, I'm not going to have children. I'm not going to have grandchildren. Poor me.
Did your
So
brother have kids?
I don't know.
Okay. I was wondering if she ever became a grandma.
Probably, I would think they would. Yeah. Where was I going with this? So yeah, I've been
Yeah,
spiritual my
you're
whole life,
none.
basically.
You were a little
And then
nun
I became like
Bethany.
a spiritual bypasser. You know, I got really spiritual for a while, and I almost joined a cult.
Ooh, dude, I'm let's hear about this.
Well, there was, I don't know if it was an official cult or anything. It was just a group of spiritual people. I used to take a lot of workshops. I was like a workshop junkie. And I think the reason that happened was because I was looking for something. I was like 20 years old, you know, and my parents weren't necessarily helping me with like, this is what you can have, you know, this is, you can go for this, like dream big. Like that was not. So I was kind of looking for just some kind of vision, some kind of. And looking back, I'm like, the real cult was my family. You know, that was the real
Exactly.
cult. But it was just kind of something I dabbled in, and it helped me get in touch with my mother wound. Like, holy moly, I'm totally projecting on this spiritual teacher, you know, some kind of positive fairy tale ending, you know, where I like get to do work I want to do. But it was all through her because I didn't feel, I never had anybody mirror back to me at that point. That you can have, you know, you can create your own thing, or you can do what you want, or you can. No one ever said, these are the possibilities. So I was really hungry for some kind of vision. And so I was very vulnerable to that at that time. So I moved and I lived at like this retreat center for 6 months.
Where was it?
It was in Texas. It was totally rural. It was
Was
such a
it
bad situation.
weird
I
or
look back
no?
now, I'm like, that was such a bad
Was it
situation.
really weird? Like, was it like a
Oh, yeah,
little?
it was totally weird. It was like, really dysfunctional people, like absolutely dysfunctional people who are almost like, I realized it when I moved there. I didn't know beforehand, but they're very much like, there was nothing behind it that was really healthy. It was all just like smoke and mirrors, gimmicky shit.
What was the leader like?
She was just very, you know, she seemed really peaceful and interesting. And she seemed, I loved the material she was teaching, but I wasn't mature at that point. I was just kind of like, it was techniques, you know, like modalities. It wasn't growth. It wasn't real growth. So it was when I got back from that experience that I just, you know what I did? I was just thinking about this the other day. I created these binders where I would every day record everything I did, the money I spent or made, the things I put in my mouth. I recorded my dreams every day. And then I would do these reports, like a monthly report. This is my monthly dream report. These are the themes of my dreams for the month. This is my food monthly
You
report. I mean, it
still
was,
have them?
I do. I do. Oh my God. It was like elaborate, but it was, I was trying to create this new identity and structure around awareness because my family was so unaware, you know, they're just like living day to day. And I wanted to create a structure. So that was kind of like a structure I created.
What did your monthly food report look like?
It was just like,
So funny.
you know, breakfast, lunch, what I ate every day, and then what, you know, how it met my goals or not. Yeah, it was really sweet.
That's so funny. And so, what does your spiritual life look like today? Do you have like a meditation practice or how do you connect?
Yeah, usually in the mornings, I have really slow mornings where I just read and meditate for a good hour and a half. It's just like, it's not rigid. It's just like reading, sitting, and I have a journal every day. So I have like things I journal about that are just what I'm feeling in the moment. So it's kind of, it's structured, but it's also pretty fluid. And I'm really happy with it. You know, I think the past year, I kind of felt like I went through a death of myself. Like, part of me is, a lot of me is dying. A lot of the person I was is dying, and I don't really know where I'm going yet. So it's like this whole new era of trust and surrender. And I'm trying not to go into, I think what I used to do in earlier times in my life is let me create a world, like a next chapter with like all these ideas. And I'm trying to just live it openly and let it happen. in its own like organic flow without attaching to anything, but rather just saying, okay, universe, I'm not attached to anything. What do you want to happen for me? And just kind of being along for the ride.
Have there been any interesting synchronicities since you've been doing that?
Yeah, I saw an opportunity online for something. And I just, as soon as I looked at it, a big hawk landed, like a 16-inch hawk, this massive thing landed on my deck, which never happens. And I was just like, okay, I think this means pay attention to what's happening in this moment. So I have no idea what's going to happen or, you know, I'm actually don't really have any pictures right now, but I'm just following the breadcrumbs.
That's great.
Yeah.
I can't remember if we talked about this last time or not, but what did your pattern look like in female friendships as you were working through the mom stuff? Did you have a slew of toxic female friendships that happened after that? Or do you feel like you worked through friendship stuff kind of at the same time?
That's been a real journey, the friendship journey, because I think because of my childhood conditioning, it was normalized for me to be like the overfunctioner and attract underfunctioning people and to be blind to my own value in a way and focus on the other person and kind of play that coach role and accept crumbs. And they felt really like a lot when they weren't. Mm-hmm. So my pattern has been that people, whenever there was a theme where it's like, as I healed and became more empowered and I would be more vocal about like, let's be reciprocal with each other. Or let's, you know, something you said bothered me, or people would drop away. People that didn't have the skills or have the desire or will to actually have a healthy friendship and put in the healthy, you know, the time, the energy, the effort. So I lost a lot of people along the way. And I realized I just wanted different things in friendships over time. One of the things that I think I have a hard time with still sometimes is people, and I had one friendship recently that dissolved, unfortunately, and I even told her up front, you know, we had known each other peripherally, then we were friends, you know, more intentionally. Mm-hmm. I had said, I have this pattern where people tend to start to see me as their coach. Mm-hmm. And I really don't want that, you know, in my friendships. You know, I want it to be like 50-50, where we really make that an intention, you know, that we both feel nourished. And it just, once again, it started to slide where this person talked for 2 hours about themselves. And I kept trying to, you know, maneuver. And it was just like really sad because once it gets to that point, it's usually not gonna get better.
Yeah, it's not resolvable. Yeah.
That's how it felt to me. And then I brought it up and the person just basically ghosted. Mm. And I'm like, wow, that is so sad. But I also didn't take it personally because I'm just like, look, there's not a lot of people that want or have or are working towards the skills of, unfortunately, putting in the time, the effort. Because it takes humility, it takes vulnerability, it takes being able to manage your shame, it takes feeling strong enough in yourself that you can take feedback without collapsing into childlike states of, you know, I'm doing something wrong or I'm bad. You know, I haven't found like a huge amount of people who are doing that intentionally.
Shit. Yeah. I went through like a really bad experience with somebody in a close friend. And I mean, I think I was just blind to the fact that they were like a covert narcissist the whole time, but I mean, horribly stonewalled and really mean.
It's hard to go through, especially when all the evidence is pointing to depth and connection and reciprocity. And it's very alarming when you can see that someone can actually mimic or perform those things and that it might not actually be what they are. I mean, think about it. We live in this therapized kind of environment. People know how to act the part, say the words.
What you're saying is so true about, it's like what I've noticed with certain people is like, as soon as you call them out on something, they can't handle it.
They can't. A lot of people can't.
And that's actually something that I think I'm really good at is like, I'm good at taking accountability and
I am really good at that too.
I'll own it.
I'll own anything. Me
Yeah. too. I don't go into a shame spiral about it. Like, I know I'm gonna fuck up, but I also know that, like, my intentions are, like, I'm never trying to be an asshole, you know?
Exactly. And when both people can have that mutual kind of allow ourselves to be imperfect, and with goodwill, with goodwill towards one another, even when things get tough. Because think about it, every relationship is going to have ruptures, meaning, conflicts, misunderstandings. That is going to happen. It's part of human interaction. And the most powerful relationships we can have are the ones that we can work through and actually have repair, especially for those of
Definitely.
us who have had trauma backgrounds where, like our families just ghost or drop us or, they don't want to work anything out. So when we find people that can really stick around and be in that repair process, that is a real friendship.
It is, and what's sad about it is, and I'm sure you're the same way, it's like I'm also quite forgiving. Like, if you
Totally.
just own up to it, we can move the fuck along. You know? Like,
Yes,
I'm
exactly. I
good.
try to like normalize ruptures as not fatal. It's just part of being human. And still, I think people are intimidated by that transparency sometimes. Like, whoa, what does this mean? Like, they take it either as I'm being bad or, I'm going to have to own something, so that means I'm bad. Like, I feel like people often go to shame with
That's a
it.
100%, that's 100% it is.
Yeah.
It is. And you gotta dip out.
And one of the things I think that's so key for us to learn, one of the things that I have learned on the journey that has helped me so much is that when I have gone into shame, I disconnect from myself and I disconnect from another person. Like, shame is kind of like a connection, like, stopper, We can't be open to another person if we're absorbed in our own shame and feeling shameful and bad and wrong. And then it's like a double disconnect because we can't feel connected to ourselves. It's almost like we're at war with ourselves, and then it interrupts that connection with another person. So if we can embrace our shame and just say, oh, I'm feeling shame right now, but I'm gonna, embrace that as with compassion. Then it ceases to have that power over us because it's a real powerful force
The
in
most
disconnecting
powerful.
us. Yeah.
How has conflict resolution been with you and your partner? And has that progressed throughout the years? Did you guys have different conflict styles?
Well, we're not together anymore, but
Oh, you're
we
not.
did,
When did
even when we
you
broke
separate?
up, we separated, I think it was the end of 2020, but we stayed in therapy together for 4 years.
After?
After, and we worked on our trauma triggers with one another therapeutically.
This is
Yeah.
interesting. How long were you together?
I think
If you say shorter than 4 years.
five. We were together
Okay.
for five.
Okay. If you
Yeah.
said that you were in therapy longer after you broke up than you were together. That's so interesting. Did you
Yeah.
have a break at all?
No. We went right from couples therapy
Was that
into.
not true? Was that not hard? Like, was that with I would for
It
me, I
was
would think
so
maybe to
hard.
move on. I feel like you need a little space at first.
Well,
Huh,
actually,
that's
I think that's part of
fascinating.
the value in it because we were no longer in a romantic relationship, but we were in a therapeutic partnership where we would, talk about our feelings. We would learn the skills of, like, how do I empathize with this person? That is triggering the hell out of me. Or how do I, there's a
That
part of
is
me.
fascinating.
It was fascinating. It was some of the most important work I've ever done, was this therapeutic conjoint relationship work. We're not, it's like I got the benefits of being in a relationship in terms of the healing, the awareness, the new tool building,
But with all the other shit,
but
yeah,
without the
the
stuff,
drama.
So it was, I'm very grateful. We just recently completed it.
When you ended the relationship, you guys must have been both very much on the same page. It wasn't like somebody was holding out hope, because that's where I feel like the danger could be, is if one person in the relationship is hoping that by staying in this, it's going to get the other person to want to get back together. That's what your hope was.
No, it was not mine. I ended the relationship. It wasn't a hope for me, but we had totally different styles. Like, I was healing my disorganized avoidant attachment and going into a secure, and she was healing her anxious attachment. So, we were so triggering to each other, right? So we just used that as like good grist for the mill of like, how to own our stuff, how to be really transparent, how to learn how, like one of the biggest things I learned was that true to empathize with someone with when the, what they're feeling is so not what I feel. Like she would say something like, you know, you're doing X, Y, Z. And I knew that's not what I was intending or doing, but that was her reality. So it was like, I learned that empathy doesn't mean that we are like erasing our reality, which is what I learned in my family. It's like only one person's narrative is right. You know, everybody's overpowering each other to try to be right. This was a totally kind of collaborative and respectful, I think, post-patriarchal energy of just like, you get to have your reality. I get to have my reality. They're different. We don't have to erase or overpower each other. We can just respect that we have different realities and empathize with each other. It's not about someone being right. And that can deepen, you know, connection. And also like I can be in my own reality when she's in her reality. Does this make sense?
Yeah, it is. I have some questions. Okay. So you start going to, you're not living, were you living together and then you weren't living together? You were never
yeah, we were living
together.
And then we separated. Yeah.
Was it once a week?
Yes.
Would you see each other other than that?
No.
So then what the hell are you bringing in like to talk about for the triggers? Because it's not like you're having, are you bringing in stuff that's happening outside of that? And then just like, oh, I had this, in, like when you talk about working through your triggers, like what was the meat? What was the meat was to the work meat? With? If you had
the meat
to, like-
was from the previous session. The meat was from the previous session. So, you know, things would happen in a session and then a lot would happen. And then it would be like chewing on that and marinating on that and like coming to the next session and we would debrief. What did you feel happened in the last session? You know, how has that been sitting with you? So there was always plenty to talk about because we would build upon, you know, all the stuff that got churned up in the relationship, you know? So, and also what was really getting worked out wasn't really about her and I, it was more about our families of origin. What was getting worked out from there.
It's so true. I was talking to a friend she's going through it and she's married. And I just keep saying to her, what you're feeling has nothing to do with her. Yes. Like you're going to have to work through this in any relationship that you're in. So whose idea was this?
Well, it was, it was actually our therapist's idea.
Has she done that before?
No. So it was kind of an experiment. And it was a really good experiment. I was going to tell you
for a lot of people, it might not be a good idea. I mean, just because I think there could be too much animosity or weird, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah,
it's
exactly.
Really
I mean,
cool.
We were like both very sophisticated psychologically, you know, we were high capacity people. So I think she wouldn't have suggested it if she didn't think we could do it. But I want to just share one of the things that I got through it. So good.
So interesting.
What she did, which I so respect and appreciate so deeply and always will, is that she really learned to own stuff. Like, yeah, like when I was doing that with you years ago, that was not right. You know, that was my wound, you know? And so I got to be validated in a way that I could never with my family, you know? And what I also learned was how to be full of ownership and vulnerability, which I couldn't do in my family of origin. So we were like testing out new capacities with one another and healing, not just our previous friendship relationship, but also, you know, repairing from our family of origin through each other.
How did you make the decision of when to stop?
She actually decided not to stop, to continue. Yeah.
Probably had a, I mean, in my opinion, has this prevented you from like new relationships?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm not looking for a new relationship necessarily. If it happens, great. But
I personally would not be okay if I started dating somebody and they were in therapy
with their ex-partner.
Yeah, I wouldn't be cool with that.
Yeah, I think it would have to be in certain parameters, you know, where you're not, in a way, honestly, for me, it could be actually a turn on because it means that person is working.
I see that.
And it's not with me. It's with them. You know, they're doing it with someone who represents their family, who they're getting insights and tools and building. As long as there wasn't any, you know, hope for a relationship with that person. I think me personally, I would find that to be a very good green flag in a certain way.
It's so interesting, though. How did your relationship evolve like over that period of time? Because it's like you're getting closer in a way. Like, did it just change? Like, how would you describe the relationship now, like, than it was 4 years ago when you started doing it?
Well, I think we were friends for many years before we were ever got together. So I think to me, it just felt like an extension of the friendship, you know, that we hold each other in high regard and we know each other so well that we get to help each other heal. So I
Is
mean,
there still a friendship?
I don't think so. I mean, there is always goodwill for sure, but there's not going to be any friendship outside of a therapeutic container. Like, I think that's the only way a connection could have continued. Was through a therapeutic container.
It's so interesting too, because it's
It is,
like,
right?
yeah, and also too, because it's like you would think that people, does it go to say that the problem wasn't that you guys just had unresolved shit? I mean, were you not compatible as well?
Oh yeah, we weren't compatible. Yeah, I don't
Okay.
think so. I think
Okay.
we were at a certain point, but you know, no, big picture, I think it was just we came together to do a lot of healing and to be in co to bring stuff up. Like, I would not have healed as deeply without that relationship, my mother wound. I just learned so
Fascinating.
much from it.
That is so cool. You guys need to, the three of you need to write a book about
I
that.
know, I know. I really feel that too because, like, I remember a lot of my healing my inner teenager came out through that process because my inner teenager wanted to fight her. I remember, like, just being really honest, like, I want to fight you. I don't want us to connect. I want to fight. And it got me this opportunity to, like, what is that? What is that part of me that wants to fight? Like, what is that? So I got to unpack through, you know, all of these interactions with her that the part of me, you know, how this whole architecture of my defenses was set up, which was my inner teen protects the despair that I had for my younger child. So the, you know, it's just like, this is how I feel powerful. And kind of dismantling the inner teen to be softer and feel more protected by my adult because I just didn't feel safe setting boundaries with her when we were together. I would just not set enough boundaries and my inner teen would come out with fighting energy. And it was like, I got to just understand all of that through the process, which,
That's so
you know,
cool.
I know, isn't
It's
that cool?
super weird, but it's super cool.
It's very unconventional,
So
but
bizarre. Huh.
yeah.
Did the stuff with your dad come up and play at all in those sessions?
Not as much. A lot of the healing with my father wound stuff was stuff I just did my like one-on-one therapy.
I just didn't know if it would impact it at all. Huh.
No,
Did
not
what about
much.
your therapist? Like, what sort of was she utilizing any particular modalities or like theories or?
I mean, she's an expert on trauma, healthy, like trauma to our development. So looking at the ways that our child, I don't think that's the right phrase, but it's something about, yeah, early trauma and development, how that impacts us and helping us understand that when we're in the middle of a trigger, like our triggers are very different. Like when I would be triggered, I would kind of pull back as in that avoidant attachment, and my ex-partner would be like, go towards me, you know, like her need would go towards, and that would make me go back even more. So it was just like really cool to put into context what some of these everyday triggers are and what they mean about what we went through when we were little kids. It kind of depersonalizes it and it helps us to have compassion for ourselves and for the other person, you know, kind of like take it out of that charged atmosphere and just kind of look at what is actually happening here, you know?
It's like a master class.
Yeah, it was really a master class. Yeah.
That's so cool. Well, I know you're all about like living in the moment and shit, but is there anything that you want to push or promote or let people know about?
I don't know when you're sharing this, but
In a couple
I'm
weeks.
doing a special right now on my Healing the Mother Wound online course, where if you join it by October 25th, you can get
Okay,
two,
it'll be out before then, probably.
two live Q&A calls with me. They're 90 minutes
Oh,
each. You can ask
nice.
me anything about the mother wound, and you also get a free little mini course that's called Subservient to Sovereign, which looks at, you know, the ways that we've been conditioned to be subservient to our mothers and how we can step out of that. I've got a couple of new articles about the terror
Yeah,
barrier.
I had that on my list when I didn't even bring it up now because I thought it was going to be too much. Do you want a little, give me a little juice on that?
Yeah, the terror barrier.
Sounds like a dog.
This is, yeah, it's like an invisible fence, right? The terror barrier is really just a somatic or emotional sensations of fear, trepidation, foreboding, panic.
When we approach those parts of ourselves
that are places our mother said never to go, like where we might have been threatening to her, or when she might have shamed us for things, you know, even things like speaking up for yourself or resting or being a certain weight, or, you know, any of the ways that our mother said, don't you dare go there. Don't you dare do that. But when we're at this point as women where we have to go there, whether it's speaking up, honoring our boundaries, our limits, taking care of ourselves. So it's an essential part of healing the mother wound is how do we work with a terror barrier? How do we work with these, the sense of, I can't go back, you know, I have to go forward, but I can't. So I have two articles that really go into detail on how to support yourself through that. Why we go through that. Why our mothers, especially when mothers who enforce codependency and enmeshment can kind of set us up for that, because like being self-advocating can feel like you're abandoning your mother or being ungrateful when in fact you're really just doing what your development demands, which is to have more authenticity and autonomy as you grow. So there's a ton of stuff on my website and check me out on Instagram. I'm always on there talking about something, and there's a lot in my link and my link tree where you can get resources and stuff.
Well, Groovy, well, this was such a nice conversation. We really did it all over the place.
We did. Thank you so much. I love talking with you.
Talking with you. That's definitely so interesting. What you holding on to? Just let it all go. What's making you slow now? Just let it all go.